Welcome to The Forum on 90.5 WCBE, bringing you the conversation shaping Columbus, straight from the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club. Every Wednesday, community leaders and local voices like yours come together to tackle the issues that matter most to Central Ohio. Want to join us in person? Tickets and details about upcoming forums are available at columbusmetroclub.org. This week's conversation addresses an issue that no one in Central Ohio seems to lack an opinion on, data centers. Central Ohio has become a major hub for data centers, but there are pressing questions about their economic benefits, environmental impact, and energy demand. This week, we welcome Ryan Augsburger, president of the Ohio Manufacturers Association, Dr. Jeff Balicki, associate faculty director of research at Ohio State's Sustainability Institute, Google's Timothy Chadwick, he's the area operations manager for Ohio, and Columbus City Council member Christopher Weitch. Your host is Karen Kassler, bureau chief of the State House News Bureau. Let's dive into this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, Ohio's Data Center Debate.
The Metropolitan Club is so great. I was here on a birthday and you guys all sang to me and it was just amazing. So I love it here. Well, I want to launch right into this because there are a lot of questions and I want to just get right to them. So let's start with Tim. Ohio has 202 data centers according to the data center map. 114 of them are in Central Ohio. So what makes Ohio a data center magnet and specifically Central Ohio?
Yeah, so there are a few things that are important when you're siting a data center. So one is availability of land. There's also availability of power, where the long haul fiber is, because that's expensive as well, what the tax structure looks like, as well as availability of employable people and the skills we need. And so Central Ohio really brings all of those together because of the efforts that the government has taken up to this point. So
let's turn to the government here with Christopher. And what's the benefit for a community in getting a data center? I mean, are there expectations and promises that come with data centers? How does the public measure if those expectations and promises are met? And what happens if they're not?
Yeah, it's a great question. First, thank you, CMC, for having me, and happy Earth Day, happy Earth Month to everyone. The challenge we find ourselves in is that there are actual economic benefits that data centers bring to Central Ohio. There are jobs. We literally have heard from union workers who have stated, after this data center has been built, I have worked in and out of this building for the last 10 years. And so that is what our residents are depending on to pay their bills, put a roof over their head, ensure that they have food to feed their families. And so that is the actual benefit that we're seeing on a regular basis. I think what folks want to see more of is how can we deepen that community benefit? How can these data centers actually help to address some of the utility usage that they're using on a regular basis? How can they help to protect our water, invest in our air quality? That is what we're hoping to get at. But for most residents, they haven't been seeing it as of late.
I want to put a question out to the panel here. What happens if communities keep pushing back on data centers? We're seeing some communities issue moratoriums on data centers. There's a constitutional amendment that could make the ballot. They're gathering signatures right now that would ban data centers that use more than 25 megawatts monthly. What happens if Ohio no longer becomes this place where data centers come or we're building them?
I'll be happy to jump in and start that, and appreciate the opportunity to be with the Metropolitan Club again today. So data centers are so useful in our modern daily life. We may take for granted how many times we're interacting with a data center throughout the day, but the reality is in the world economy today, we're in a space race, a technology race for AI dominance. And so I saw Greg Lawson of the Buckeye Institute just come in, who penned a column that ran just a couple days ago. And if that ballot issue, Karen, passed, and Ohio closed the door, slammed the door on new data centers, if other states followed suit, you'd be looking at a China first strategy. That was Greg's column. Because make no mistake, this is a worldwide competition for technology resources.
I'll add, Maine has already passed an initiative to ban data centers just recently. And I think it's 13 states that have various initiatives of various states to limit data center construction in their state. To answer the question too is even with those ballot initiatives and the pushback, odds are the data centers will go somewhere, right? And getting to the point about economic development and so on, that development occurs somewhere else. There's understandably a desire to attract a data center to Ohio. And with China, I mean, China is ahead of us in many respects. About a third of, they generate from wind and solar about a third of the global generation of electricity. And with that comes no operational emissions, right? They have taken a strategy that focuses more on industrial policy as electricity generating assets as being infrastructure that is necessary. And instead of the sort of the incremental investment that we have here in the United States, they actually have overcapacity, and that helps them build the data centers much more efficiently and do so in a way that has less environmental and human health consequences.
Let's stay with that idea, the energy idea, because I think a lot of people are blaming data centers right now for seeing huge increases in electricity bills. And one of the things that's been brought up is that data centers eventually might need their own generation. They might be building their own small nuclear plants, or we see the one that's in Piketon that's going to have a huge natural gas plant next to it. What's the solution here for high energy costs, high utility costs for people who are not in the data center?
I would change that. They might need their own generation to they are installing their own generation. The Colossus XAI Elon Musk data center in Memphis has, I believe, 21 of its own natural gas combustion turbines. They are now building Colossus 2, which is supposed to have up to 40. So they're installing their own generation, and it's behind the meter. It's on their own site. And part of the reason that is attractive is it's easier to permit. You don't have to do the interconnection request and all that. You can do it much, much quicker. The timeline for a data center is about 18 to 24 months. Timeline for transmission investment is about 5 to 7 or 10 years. Get new generation capacity, it's about 5 to 7 years. So the pace of the data center expansion really is much larger than our ability to sustain it with the electricity generation. So behind the meter on-site generation approaches are useful. They do have their implications though, and while it could be perceived as a response to, yes, electricity rates have been increasing, and on average over the throughout the country, we've paid 10% more for electricity than we did a year ago. Now there's several issues with how much of the electricity demand that is being projected is actually real, and we can talk about these phantom loads and speculative bids.
I think Ryan wanted to get in on that.
And so that's what I knew that. So I said we can talk about it. I meant Ryan. But there are consequences for how we operate the electricity system if you're putting things behind the meter, right? Instead of drawing power from the electricity grid where the operators really focus on reliability, you now have something behind the meter that if that goes down, they got to pull from emergency generation, either diesel backup or from the grid. So the grid becomes a kind of a backup, but it needs to be there, and our reserve capacity is basically depleted.
Ryan, jump in.
Thank you. And I build on what Jeff said there. The behind-the-meter generation is important. We have 2 megawatts of behind-the-meter generation that's come online in really just the last year since the passage of state legislation that facilitated that. That was important legislation. The leaders of the Ohio General Assembly did a good job looking out for Ohio's future with that. But that's a small amount compared to the bulk of electricity that most all of us are paying for through the investor-owned utility grid. So, you know, the narrative that we're hearing, and we want to hear more about how Google and hear from Tim about the behind-the-meter in his experience, but this narrative that this proliferation of data centers are going to come online and deny all of us power for our homes or businesses and crash the grid. That's the narrative you've been hearing, and that's going to happen, right? Is that the narrative goes on if we don't give the utilities additional authority to, build nuclear generation, which they're not allowed to do in a deregulated state, or more transmission building. They're doing a lot of transmission building, but that's the narrative. We've looked real carefully at that narrative, and we find it just doesn't check out. We think you need to follow the money. And so I'd ask you to keep an open mind, because some of what I've learned about data centers in the last couple of years was different than I thought. The problem facing Ohioans today is high power bills. If you've looked at your power bill recently, you know what I'm talking about. They're sky high. What's the culprit? A hint, it's not data centers. The research we've completed points blame at utility-produced future electric forecasts and insufficient safeguards to protect customers from inflated forecasts. So let me break that down. We're seeing some downright outlandish future load forecast numbers being bandied about by investor-owned utilities. These are projections that the utilities did not defend in their proceedings at the PUCO in the last year. So, quick review, actual electricity power demand has been pretty flat for the past quarter century. Why is that? Energy efficiencies have disrupted electric load. Think of the light bulb that you used 25 years ago. It used 100 watts, now it takes 5 watts. That's a 95% reduction. In factories, we've seen huge reductions just like that, whether it's lighting, motors, air compressors, every single industrial machine you can think of. Let's talk about the data centers. We've had them. We've had data centers online in Ohio for decades.
We've got bigger ones coming on.
We've got bigger ones coming on. But the point is, the grid can handle that. We can solve problems through market economics. Additional grid comes on, there's generators that want to serve that. Well, there's utilities that want to serve that.
Let's bring Christopher in here.
Move on, because I don't want to let the state off the hook as well. They have created a regulatory burden on cheap, fast, renewable energy that could be brought to the market to help address this. They have rolled back energy efficiency standards, which is also increasing our energy costs. They also have an outdated building code that doesn't allow us to have net zero ready buildings so that we can address this in our communities. So yes, data centers are part of the problem. And if you're talking about 70 to 90 additional data centers coming over the next, 5 to 10 years, that's an issue, right? And so they're using about 5% of energy usage in the state today. They're projected to go up 10% by 2030, and by 2040, potentially 25% of energy usage will come from data centers. So it's a mix of all of them. Right? And I think if we just want to let everybody off the hook, we'll never actually address the problem or concern.
Absolutely. So I am not a regulator, and I cannot speak for the industry as a whole, but I can speak to Google. And at Google, we are committed to ensure that our electricity use doesn't affect the ratepayer. Okay? We're paying for our own capacity to be built. We're also paying for all of our electricity and for the infrastructure that we need to install buildings in Ohio. Just as an example, a few months ago, we signed a power purchase agreement for 1.5 terawatt hours of power from a solar facility that's being built in Northwest Ohio, specifically to power our data centers. Now, that doesn't cover everything, but that's just an anecdote for the efforts that Google takes to make sure that we are an integrated, responsible part of the community.
Going off Christopher's point here, the concerns about environmental impact on air, for instance, and that a lot of things we're talking about here are fossil fuel generators, and where's the room for renewables? Where's that part of the discussion?
So I would say that there is a lot of room for renewables. It's just hard here in Ohio, as was mentioned before. nationally, about 65% of our electricity is generated from fossil fuels. Here in Ohio, it's about 80%. And when you have electricity generation from fossil fuels, you have things like particulates that are emitted. You have nitrogen dioxide. You have sulfur dioxide that's created. We have carbon dioxide, which is the principal greenhouse gas altering our climate. And when we're relying increasingly on natural gas, and we have a natural gas distribution and transmission system that is leaky, the primary component of natural gas is methane, and methane is about 20 times more potent a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. And so as we have, in essence, taken a strategy as build the natural gas now because it's quicker and easier and nuclear later, we're creating the emissions that are just continuing to contribute to climate change. Now, the nitrogen dioxide that is produced when you combust natural gas is well established to be implicated in respiratory disease, higher cases, higher rates of asthma, cardiovascular disease, and so on. So when we talk about environment, it's not just like a green tree out there. It's actually us, right? We need to slow, stop, and reverse the accumulation of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, full stop. But we also have to do so in a way that when we understand for our economic development, we require human well-being. And 80% of the way we do that in Ohio is undermining the environment upon which our well-being depends.
Ryan, did you want to jump in?
A lot of elements to address in that, and really want to commend Google for being here so we can all hear direct from them. And as you heard from Tim, that company is investing in all the above forms of energy generation. And that's the beautiful thing about the power of markets, right? If a customer wants this or that form of generation, they can procure it. So again, it comes back. I'm sorry, I'm a broken record. The forecasts do not stand up. They are overestimated. They are driving up your generation price. They are driving up your transmission price. Your transmission price is 300% more than it used to be. And that's been going on for 10 years before the data centers. Who's winning? Who's winning? Who's winning in this paradigm? The people that own the wires, right? They're winning. It's very profitable. They brag about it to their investors, whether or not they're serving the load, whether the data center comes online or not. They're winning. Generators, they're also winning with the price of power set by the competitive market right now, sky high. They're winning. Who's losing? Customers are losing. Who else? Data centers, because not only are they being blamed, I think, unfairly for these forecasts, I think they're used as a scapegoat by the utilities to explain why your power bill's high right now, and it is very high. They're also being discriminated against through the rate structure that's been put in place in Ohio on them, and that's a subject of litigation. So a lot going on here.
Ryan, I want to jump in because, yes, they are now starting to do that, but that is mainly because public opinion on data centers has really turned. And a lot of companies are realizing if we do not do something to kind of show that we either care about the environment or care about the people who live around these data centers, they're going to come at us with pitchforks. So it is nice that they have now decided that bringing renewable energy to their sites is something that they want to do. I would ask, throughout the entire span of Google's data center building capital investment, has that always been the case, right? Has every data center that has behind the meter generation, is it clean? I would bet the answer is no.
So I can't speak to the industry. At Google in Ohio, we do not have behind the meter generation at this time. I would like to highlight one thing that Ryan said about transmission costs. One of the efforts that we've taken at Google is that we've partnered with a company called CTC Global. They manufacture the transmission lines of today, right? So the transmission lines that you see around Ohio are probably the ones that were invented in 1908, okay? CTC Global goes from a steel cord transmission line to a composite cord transmission line. And that same size line can double the capacity. And what we've done at Google is we've said, we've gone to the utility companies and we've said, if you upgrade your lines, we will cover the cost difference between the two materials. If your linemen need the training, we'll cover the cost for the training. And if you need the studies done for the integration into the system, we will also cover the cost for that. And that's what Google has done.
Real quick,
Oh.
I want to move on to something else.
Quickly, three numbers and then some context. So three numbers. A typical modern data center requires about the same amount of electricity as 100,000 households. That's a heck of a lot of energy efficiency to compensate for one data center. The newer hyperscale data centers are projected to require about 20 times that in electricity. And then and Lawrence Berkeley National Lab, a U.S. Department of Energy National Lab, projects that by 2028, the data centers will be consuming about 12% of our electricity generation. And yes, the projections are off, and they are sort of, by definition, projections will be wrong, but we have to understand and unravel why. And part of the reason why are the timelines I mentioned before, right? It takes upwards of 2 years to get a data center up and going. It takes 7 to 10 years to get the transmission, 5 to 7 to get the generation. It is a slow process to get that generation online, which means that the data centers, because they're scouting for different locations, are putting in multiple bids for interconnection requests. And there's a requirement that we be able to provide that electricity. So that's what I was referring to before by phantom loads, is that they're putting in multiple bids, right? So if we unpack that and address why and seek to address that rather than just placing blame on a particular entity or sector, then I think we can make some progress.
I want to move on to another resource that people are concerned about with data centers using, that's water. And so let's just start with Tim. I've read that data centers can use between 1 million and 5 million gallons of water a day. I've been told by the data center industry that that's not an accurate number. What's being done with regard to water, not only the water you're using, but also the water that is being released out of the data center once it's done?
Yeah, it's a good topic to discuss. So it is true that data centers can use 1 to 5 million gallons of water a day. It is important to keep that in perspective when we talk about an Olympic-sized swimming pool. Million's a big number, right? If we were to take that to an Olympic-sized swimming pool, you're looking at about 8 swimming pools a day, okay? So that kind of puts it in perspective for something that you can look and see as opposed to just a big number. The other thing I would say is at Google, we are hyper-local when we talk about our decisions in using water resources. So each data center campus is analyzed with the municipality and all the stakeholders on what is the best solution for Google's data center where it's at. In Ohio, a lot of times, but not always, that looks like a cooling tower that evaporates water into the air. And that's where most of the water that we're talking about is consumed. In Ohio, all of our data centers, any water that gets discharged goes to the local municipal sewer. So we're not discharging to surface water. It's going to the sewer. And as a large user, we're paying a lot of money into those systems that they can then use for upgrades that affect everybody. Okay. And like I said, everything is hyperlocal. If the water resources don't exist, or the sewer resources don't exist, or it doesn't make sense to use water because of the impact to the community, we have air-cooled solutions. Now, those air-cooled solutions use more power, okay? And that's why it has to be hyperlocal, and we have to plan for every campus.
Go right ahead.
Just jump in on that, especially from the wastewater standpoint. So I appreciate that Google wants to connect to the local municipality, but there are data center companies that are looking to appeal to the EPA so that they can just dump wastewater into our rivers and streams. And that should not be acceptable from anybody in the industry, because we do not know the long-term impact and what that would look like. Yes, they should be connecting to the local municipal sewer system to make that work. But here's the rub. They're also hiding the fact of what is actually going to be released in their wastewater. They will claim that this is proprietary information, so we cannot tell you. Well, how can the municipal water company deal with that discharge if we do not know what is coming?
I'll add that the majority of the water requirements for a data center aren't at the data center. They're where the electricity is being generated to cool that power plant. So when we have thermal power plants like coal and natural gas, you got to cool them. And that is the dominant source of water requirements and for the data center. There's some on-site for cooling racks and servers and so on. But when you think about, we exist in the PJM region of the country, so we are an integrated system from here basically to the Eastern Seaboard, 13 states. And the electricity that's generated throughout the region is sort of shipped around and so on. When we have a load here in Ohio, we're pulling electricity from the next cheapest generator, and which is likely to be natural gas, and that needs to be cooled. And when we shift from the requiring energy from the grid to the on-site behind the meter generation using natural gas, you're now cooling those natural gas turbines at that power at that data center, which shifts the burden of where the emissions are occurring and where the water requirements are.
I want to ask you about another thing that some of the folks who are concerned about data centers have brought up, and that is real concerns about transparency. And Christopher, you just mentioned something about things being hidden. I mean, some of these deals, local residents will try to go out and find out information, and they're being told by their local government that they can't reveal any of those details. And in Central Ohio, we have a lot of different communities that have data centers. It's not just Columbus. So how do people trust and know more about these deals that create these data centers?
I think that's your answer, the dead silence that you just heard. I don't think there is a way for us to trust if folks are going to hide behind NDAs, if you're going to hide behind the claim that this is proprietary information, we will actually never know the true impact of what water.
Can government officials do something about that?
I think there are things that we can do, and there are things that we are exploring as a city, because we have the great position of being the city, but also the local municipal water company, right? And so what can we do that says, hey, if you want our water, you're going to have to tell us X, Y, and Z, because we need to know how to prepare for what is going to come out of your data center. But how do you trust that? And I think that was what came up in our hearing, where there's a lot of misinformation out there. And because companies are not being upfront and transparent, there is no way in which we can answer the questions that our residents pose to us.
It's also incredibly complicated. I mean, we've been sitting here talking about, you know, behind the grid and things like this. I mean, a lot of people don't understand what all this is because it's very complex information.
Well, that's where we get into transparency. We need greater transparency and accountability in the systems that are built to serve data centers and every other kind of business. We need to know that forecast, whether it's for water or electricity, we need to know that those aren't junk. And right now, customers are paying for way too much junk. That's phantom load. So transparency is absolutely needed in regulatory forecasting of utilities.
You're listening to the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Central Ohio has become a major hub for data centers, drawing global tech companies, but there are pressing questions about land use, tax incentives, environmental impact, and energy demand. This week, we're hearing from Ryan Augsburger with the Ohio Manufacturers Association, Dr. Jeff Balicki with The Ohio State University, Google's Timothy Chadwick, and Columbus City Council member Christopher Weich. Your host is Karen Kassler with the State House News Bureau. We'll get back to this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, Ohio's Data Center Debate, after a short break.
Do you love amazing stories? I know I do. I'm Michael Kent, and every week on my show, we examine something from history that's so unbelievable it sounds made up, but is 100% verifiably true. It's a podcast called The Internet Says It's True, and there are hundreds of episodes to choose from. For example, did you know the story of how Leonard Nimoy came up with Live Long and Prosper for Star Trek? Or how Colombia is dealing with a hippo problem that goes back directly to Pablo Escobar? Or one of my favorite stories, a man figured out that a nondescript Winnebago being auctioned online was actually an important part of space exploration history. These are all stories from The Internet Says It's True. Listening to a podcast has never been easier. You can listen through any popular podcast app, through the NPR app, or download the fantastic new WCBE app, click the Podcasts tab, and look for The Internet Says It's True with Michael Kent. You'll have so many stories up your sleeve, you'll feel like the smartest person in the room, especially if you're home alone.
Hi there, this is Morgan James. Every album represents a step in an artist's journey. Hello, music lovers. I'm inviting you to listen to Music Journeys with Mike Foley. Mike mixes music and conversation with artists to share what informed and inspired their latest project, how the love of music began, what music means to them, and so much more. We've chatted about three of my projects, the most recent being Soul Remains the Same, a soul album of songs you would never expect. You can always expect the perfect combination of music and stories on Music Journeys. The show airs Saturday afternoons at 3:30 on WCBE. Recent episodes are available on the major podcast platforms and the WCBE app. To meet and hear more from all the musicians featured since its start in 2018, including me, to be the first to be featured three times on the show, look for Music Journeys on WCBE's podcast experience at WCBE.org.
Welcome back to the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week's conversation addresses an issue that no one in Central Ohio seems to lack an opinion on, data centers. Central Ohio has become a major hub for data centers, but there are pressing questions about their economic benefits, environmental impact, and energy demand. This week, we welcome Ryan Augsburger, president of the Ohio Manufacturers Association, Dr. Jeff Balicki, associate faculty director of research at Ohio State's Sustainability Institute, Google's Timothy Chadwick, he's the area operations manager for Ohio, and Columbus City Council member Christopher Weish. Your host is Karen Kassler, Bureau Chief of the State House News Bureau. Let's get back to this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, Ohio's Data Center Debate.
Are you folks surprised at the way that the public opinion of data centers has turned? I mean, they were seen as clean energy or clean industry for a while, and now this crosses party lines where people are concerned about what data centers offer, what they actually deliver on. Are you surprised that public opinion has swung so dramatically? Not all of it, but certainly there's been a very vocal group of people who are very concerned.
Well, I'll just say there's a little bit of digital NIMBYism going on here. It is always interesting to see that people will get on their smartphone, go to social media, correct their posts via AI, and complain about data centers being located in their community. If you don't want data centers to be here, I'm going to ask you to reduce your usage of data so that we are not having this peak in demand, which is attracting companies here to actually make that investment.
One thing I'd like to add, and it goes back to Jeffrey's comment about the forecast for 12% of energy is going to go to data centers. Data centers don't change the amount of data we're using or creating, okay? So in the past, if you were a retailer, you had a room of servers in your business, and you sized that to handle Black Friday, right? And if you were a tax preparer, you had a room of servers in your building, and those servers were sized to handle April 14th and April 15th, okay? What data centers have done is they've brought all of that to one spot, and you can level the load across time, and so the overall impact is lessened because it takes less infrastructure to do the same amount of tasks that we're all doing every day already, right? Now, that can cause some friction because you do see large projects, right? Some of these projects take up quite a bit of land. Some of them can be very visible, right? But at Google, like I said, we are committed to being a partner in every community that we're in. We're committed to investing in the economic development of the community. Yeah. Right? And we're committed to being a good partner, both from the effect that we have on ratepayers and the effect that we have on our neighbors.
On the idea of forecasting, I think a lot of people have been concerned about an AI bubble. And all this is happening because of the rapid use and acceleration of AI. What if there's an AI bubble? Is this going to be a massive waste of resources and money and all the things that we're concerned about here?
Yeah, Jeff Bezos said this is kind of a industrial bubble. Bill Gates, absolutely, there are a ton of these investments that will be dead ends. Mark Zuckerberg, the risks probably are not being aggressive enough. Elon Musk, space-based AI is obviously the only way to scale it. It's always sunny in space. I mean, the contention here is that large data centers are going to go into space and be solar powered. So we do think that is an interesting development here. But keep in mind, data centers, just like manufacturing facilities, once they go into business, they figure out how to become more efficient. And so there are a couple of economic theories around this that drive industrial efficiency in compute power. And so what requires 200 megawatts today might require 10 or less, you know, into the future. And that also is a quick reminder, another issue we didn't cover earlier is the supply chain. Every one of those facilities, like Tim's responsible for with Google, has a ton of manufactured equipment in it, and a lot of that's made in Ohio. So there's a direct relationship between manufactured products as well as the contractors who install it, and it's going to be a constant updating of the technology.
Before you, I want to remind our audience here, we're going to go to you for questions in just a minute. It's CMC's longstanding tradition to take audience questions. And if you have a question for our panelists, now's the perfect time to head to the microphone over there with Doug. For those of you who are joining on YouTube, you can please drop your questions into the chat. And let's just hear from Christopher before we do that.
Yeah, and I'll be brief. I think that point about AI being a bubble is a concern that is real, right? And the one thing we do not talk about is how will we decommission these sites, right? If they are going to be expanding another 70 to 90 in the state, a whole bunch of them in central Ohio, are we just now leaving these in place when they are no longer necessary? And that is a concern that we should also be taking into consideration as well.
Anybody want to add anything? Let's go to questions. Doug, go right ahead.
Karen, thank you very much. Thank you so much to today's panelists. A spicy conversation today about an important topic, so we're grateful. Thank you all. If you have a question for today's panelists, as Karen said, please do join us here at the microphone. We'll try to get to as many of your questions as we can. If you're watching on the live stream, please type your questions into YouTube, and we'll try to get to those as well. Great questions at CMC can always be asked in just one or two sentences. They are short. And what punctuation mark does a question end with that makes it a question? They end with question marks. Yes, it's always good to remind ourselves of that. Okay, here's the first one. I'll launch us off with this one. House Bill 15 allows data centers to fast track gas plants behind the meter without consultation with local communities. How do we address this?
Bill 15 earlier, we were a major proponent of that legislation. As I said, facilitates the build out of behind the meter generation. I don't have an answer to that specific question. Be happy to round one up.
I think this question highlights that there are many stakeholders involved. One is the data center, one is the grid, and the other is the communities and the backyards in which some of these data centers are being located. And so when you're putting natural gas generation at the site of the data center, and many of these data centers are increasingly in people's backyards. And so you're emitting that nitrogen dioxide and so on in people's backyards. And it's, you asked earlier, are we surprised by the public pushback? And I was shaking my head. No, I'm not surprised, right? Like if I had a natural gas turbine in my backyard, I understand the thermodynamics and the combustion and the mixing of the carbon dioxide and all that stuff. And I would be like, I still don't want it there. And we have this, and it's not just NIMBYism, it's bananas. Build absolutely nothing anywhere near anybody.
But you mentioned before the timeline to getting all these things up and running. I think House Bill 15 was an attempt to try to deal with that and help with creating for data centers to create their own generation.
Yeah, and in this state, it's become apparent that relatively recent legislation has had a tenuous relationship with honesty. And I think people have an understandable concern, right? Do I trust that this is actually going to come to fruition, whether it's a bubble, or do I trust that I, as a resident of the state, am actually going to be protected, whether it's economically or physically? And while trying to clear the way for a data center to get up and running the electricity it needs and so on, there are communities and there are people involved too. And absent addressing that in ways that feel comfortable, yeah, you're going to get the pushback.
Let's go to another question.
Hello, I'm Jeffrey from CareSource. So listening to all of you today, I think it reminds me is how do you take out the fear factor? Because that's what it really involves for the residents and the people that live in the community. The fear factor from farmlands that grow our food are now being built with huge data centers. They don't employ a lot of people. The consumers read about corporate charity that the city and the state give all these hugely profitable companies tax abatements, so we're not getting that tax revenue that we need. And then, of course, we have the energy problem that we still have to solve. So what energy, I'd like to know technologically, how far are we away from fusion that would solve a lot of our problems with energy that doesn't pollute and is very environmentally friendly?
Go ahead, Jeff.
I used to know this number, but what's the distance from us to the sun, right? That is fusion, right? And if we're powering our economy by solar energy, for example, or by wind, which at its root is from sun, then we have that renewable source. Fusion technology in and of itself, it's always a few decades away, and it's been a few decades away for several decades, to have it be able to be controlled and sustained and safe. So that would be a fantastic solution. It's not anything that we can rely upon right now or at the pace that the data centers are coming online.
I want to address something else that he brought up in the question, the fear factor, that people are concerned that these things are costing tax incentives. They're not going to bring the jobs that they're not going to bring a lot of good jobs. How do you address that and the concerns that people have over those things?
And I'll just jump in because I think we have tried to do this with our residents, right? And that's just giving them a space and opportunity to pose the questions that they have and provide them reliable, factual information on what we are seeing. I think sometimes elected officials are just so scared to talk to people. And if they did the job of engaging with their community and talking to them, meeting them where they're at, we can dispel a lot of fear. Now, there's not a lot of trust for elected officials as well, so that's going to be taken for a grain of salt depending on who you're talking to. But we have to be willing to have hard conversations and even push back on our friends and neighbors when what they are saying is incorrect.
Tim, you're in the firing line here.
I am. And I'm happy to address the employment question. So this is actually very complex. We talked about the timeline to permit a data center, to build a data center, back that up by months or years to purchase the land, potentially get it rezoned, that whole process. So at Google, we're not going to make promises that we're not going to keep. Okay. And so when we look at the timeline to get a data center built, it's much longer than the timeline it takes. It's probably me saying Google all the time.
It is an Android phone.
Yeah, I support that. So it's this long process, right? And our capacity prediction is actually a shorter timeline than the timeline to develop the property. Okay, so if we came in and we said, at this particular site, I'm going to build 3 or 5 data centers, and I know I'm going to employ this many people, the perception would be different. But what happens is we go and we purchase this site, and we make a commitment we know we can keep, which is probably the first 1 or 2 buildings. Okay? And when we do that, we're very conservative because we don't want to find ourselves at the point where we say, community, we did not meet our commitment to you. Right? So what happens a lot is people will anchor on that information that may be found that says, you know, this data center is going to come in and they're only going to have 30 permanent employees, right? But that's a conservative, you know, 3 years from when we're actually going to get to the point of hiring people, what we're comfortable with committing to meet. we should check back later. And this is what I would say. I'll get in trouble if I talk about specific numbers, right? But what I would say is that there's two factors to this. One is we do employ a lot of people. Not all of those are direct employees that get an Alphabet W-2, okay? But we're employing a lot of people every day, okay? Go and find a data center on Google Maps, right? Go look at the parking spots we have there. We don't build the parking spots because no one's gonna park in them. One of like my daily frustrations is managing people parking on my campus, okay? It's like insanely frustrating, okay? The other thing, just a quick anecdote. About a year ago, I was doing one of the things that I enjoy the most, which is I was sitting down with one of my technicians to tell him that he got promoted, okay? And I sat down and I said, hey, Rob, you got promoted. Here's your new pay rate. And he said, this is the day I've been waiting for. He said, Tyler and I, another one of my technicians, we used to sit where we were at the manufacturing plant and say, one day we're gonna make a dollar a minute, right? They went from a manufacturing job that paid $60,000 to $80,000 a year. And about 4 years later, those two individuals are right around $250,000 a year as a technician, right? Or as a brand new program manager. So these are not just the number of jobs that we're bringing, it's the quality of jobs that we're bringing into the community.
I want to get to a couple more questions here real quick.
Thank you. My name is Marcia Miller. I live in the Darby Accord area, and we are negotiating the next iteration of that accord. And there's a data center proposed within that area adjacent to my property that is within a mile of 1,300 conserved acres of wetland and prairie. Very expensively restored, mostly wetland. This land will eventually be part of our wonderful Metro Parks area. Because of lack of transparency and because of what I have researched on environmental and pollution concerns, and also that the, you know, as you've been talking about, the laws aren't quite there to regulate where these can go and where these can't go. How do you talk to someone like me? I'm desperately concerned that the land that I love and this river that is one of the main pure rivers in our country, not just in our state, is downstream from that.
Who wants to take that?
So I'll jump in because we just had a hearing recently on the Darby Accord Amendment. That was my literal first question is, what are we doing about data? And maybe we take a poll, is it data? But what are we doing about data centers in the Darby? And there was honestly not a really good answer in terms of what regulations that we could put into the accord that could make it work. But if the township is choosing to pass a moratorium, this is something that is likely going to come to Columbus's way, in which case there are things that we are trying to regulate to require them to do things. Like ideally, I don't think the Darby is a good place for it, right? Because this is all about conservation. This is a scenic river that is needed to be protected, that is already in danger with development already occurring in and around the area. But your advocacy coming here, making that known to your elected officials is helpful as we continue to navigate what this is gonna look like.
I think land use is a really important consideration here, and it goes to this whole question of local government. Where in the state should these be sited? And the reality is elected leaders are gonna have to factor the economic benefits, and they're gonna have to factor in what some of the residents will determine as a detriment. The data centers pay a lot of taxes, a lot. You know, we talked about the prior statement about incentives. I think you'll find that Jobs Ohio and its network of economic development organizations do not provide incentives to data centers. Now, there might be local tax abatements. That's a local government by local government consideration. That would determine whether or not the data center is going to pay property tax, which is just one category. They're also paying employment taxes. They're paying kilowatt hour tax on all of that electricity. And guess where kilowatt hour tax goes? Most of it goes to the GRF, but quite a bit of it also goes to local schools. So there's an awful lot of benefits there. And, you know, Ohio's elected leaders, it's just like the market. Some are going to, you know, say, welcome data center. And 20 years later, their citizenry is going to say, thank goodness for our leaders back then. And others, it's going to be, you know, the tale of two cities.
Go to another question.
Hi. I've been doing a lot of personal research on data center effect on water, and I read a lot about how different cities that are already data center hubs are facing like water strain. And a lot of hyperscale data centers are the ones implementing efficient technologies and using less water, but smaller and mid-sized data centers are still using massive amounts of water. How are is everyone working together to keep all data centers accountable and protect our water sources in Ohio?
You addressed some of this earlier, but I think it's a really an interesting question to talk about the smaller ones.
It is. And again, I'm not an industry spokesperson, right? I just operate the data centers for Google in Ohio. This is a concern, and I think it's a valid concern. What we do at Google is we've committed that by 2030, we'll replenish 120% of the water that we use, right, in both our corporate offices and our data centers. And I can highlight a couple projects we have in Ohio now that kind of show that commitment and how we're doing it. So we are working with the Nature Conservancy and the Licking County Soil and Water Conservation District, okay? We have provided the funding and worked with our partners to get about 700 acres of farmland runoff to flow through a restored wetland before it flows into Buckeye Lake to ensure that that we're helping remediate some of those issues. In Delaware County, in the Upper Scioto watershed, we're working to restore the west branch of the Little Walnut Creek, restore it to its previous floodplain and path. What that does is it slows the water down. It allows that water to trickle down into the aquifer, replenish that water instead of flowing down the Scioto, eventually making it to the Ohio River and not being seen again. So,
Greg Lawson.
Thank you. So two kind of interrelated questions about the energy resources. The intermittency that a lot of renewables have versus the baseload generation so that it's on all the time. I know you've got battery storage, but how do you navigate that issue with the renewables versus the baseload? And I know there was some discussion earlier about China doing a lot relative to renewables, but they still get, like, I'm looking at numbers from 2023 from the International Energy Association. They get over 60% of their energy is still from coal in China, and they're continuing to build coal. So while they're still relevant in renewables, they're still, the backbone of their energy is still fossil fuels. So how do we reconcile the intermittency of renewables with the competition we talked about at the outset and the fact that China is still using as the base load fossil fuels?
So yes, China has, one of the great concerns about China from an energy standpoint has been its build out of coal power plants over the past few decades. They are also in the process of decommissioning a lot. As I said, they, part of the reason that China is able to and very competitive to build the data centers really quickly is because they have built out substantial amounts of renewable wind and solar throughout the country. Again, as an industrial policy approach and not based on market incentives that are at the whims of different administrations. I don't like to say intermittency, I say variability, same sort of thing. Sometimes the sun doesn't shine, sometimes the wind doesn't blow. So the more you have it and the more different places you have it, you're able to then compensate better. The more we invest strategically and thoroughly in energy storage and not just meaning batteries, the more you're able to store that when there is excess electricity being generated, say during the middle of the day on a sunny day, you can store that for to be dispatched in the middle of the night when there's no sunlight. Renewable, especially wind or solar generation, does have its problems, especially in places that have high penetrations of solar energy, like California. So, like during the night, there's no solar generation, and then we're all waking up and we're turning on our coffee makers and our espresso machines and our AI-enabled iPads and so on. And the sun is starting to come up, and all of a sudden you get this big load of electricity being generated from solar, and you have to ramp down everything else to accommodate that. And if you can't ramp it down quickly, you either waste it or you store it. And then in the evenings when we're coming home and turning on our TVs and so on, we have an increase in electricity generation as the sun is typically going down and that solar load is going offline. We got to ramp up the other generation in order to accommodate for that. So part of the way you do it is storage, and part of the way, I mean, natural gas is great at it. It's kind of like a jet engine. You can ramp it up and down pretty easily.
It's hard to leave this conversation, but we have to. So I'm so sorry about that. But it's been wonderful talking to you all. Thank you very much. And thank you for all the questions.
You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week, we explore the rapid growth of data centers in Central Ohio and the complex trade-offs that come with it. We examined how leaders are balancing economic opportunity with energy demand, land use, and environmental impact. This week, we heard from Ryan Augsburger with the Ohio Manufacturers Association, Dr. Jeff Balicki with The Ohio State University, Timothy Chadwick with Google, and Columbus City Council member Christopher Weich. Your host was Karen Kassler with the State House News Bureau. This week's forum was sponsored by the Franklin Soil and Water Conservation District, the Ohio Chamber of Commerce, and the Ohio Manufacturers Association. The presenting sponsor of our live stream was the Center for Human Kindness at the Columbus Foundation. The Columbus Dispatch was our live stream partner. Additional support was provided by Downtown Columbus Incorporated and the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. If you'd like to keep exploring this week's forum topic, our terrific friends at the Columbus Metropolitan Library recommend reading The Dark Cloud, The Hidden Costs of the Digital World by Guillaume Pitron. Join us next week as the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club once again connects people and ideas through community conversations. I hope you'll join us. I'm Doug Buchanan. Thanks for listening.